There is a raging bull market going on in BitTensor right now as billionaires and OGs have labeled this the next Bitcoin.
The magic behind BitTensor are the subnets. And today we have a very special guest who has a hand in three different subnets.
By the end of this episode, you're going to know exactly why smart money is piling into BitTensor and how you can position your portfolio to capitalize on this.
Today, we have a very special guest, and that's Chris Zachariah. He is the founding member of Macrocosmos.ai and has his hand in three different subnets. Chris, welcome to the show.
Great to be here. Nice to meet you guys.
Absolutely, man. This is going to be a great episode. We want to dive into Macrocosmos, of course, and the multiple subnets you are involved with. We also want to talk about your new project, which I think is very exciting. I think our listeners are going to love it, and that's Bitstarter. But let's start high level with your story and how you got involved with BitTensor.
All right. First thing to say is before BitTensor, I'd never even worked in tech before, let alone crypto AI. BitTensor has been around for much longer, but Macrocosmos, we began in late 2023 when two of my closest friends approached me and said, hey, you want to help us launch this crypto AI business? It's built on BitTensor. It's robots training robots. Check it out. So I got into it through Stefan Cruz, who was at that point the CTO of BitTensor itself. And he's been a friend of mine for about over 10 years now. He was CTO of BitTensor back in the early days. He created the very first subnet. He created subnet one. Guy's a theoretical physicist with a doctorate. Actually studied in Vancouver, where you guys are right now. So Stefan was working closely with the founder of BitTensor, Jacob Steves. He created the idea of multiple subnets rather than just having one network. You can have many subnetworks, each of which produces a different intelligence commodity. So when they started creating subnets, they realized the network can't have the protocol and the individual subnets. They need to be independent of each other. So Stefan asked Will, because Will has a lot of business experience and Stefan's an academic, and Will asked me, help us launch this company. That was late 2023 when Cosmos was pre-launch. BitTensor was a handful of obscure subnets, no subnet tokens, no sub-economy of teams, brands, or products like there is right now. And Macrocosmos was the first team to have like photos of its staff on its website. That's how early it was, and it was a real differentiator for us. So I went from being, what is this, to we are leading the single biggest project on BitTensor. We were the biggest owner operator for a long time. And at one point we had five subnets. Now we have three. So my background is like in writing, communications. I wrote for The Guardian in the UK and The Independent, had my own communications consultancy, worked in infrastructure for a long time. And my job was basically communicate complex subjects in a way that can motivate people and inspire them to act. And that's why Will and Steph brought me in, because BitTensor can be complicated, but when you understand it, it's one of the most inspiring tech projects you'll ever come across. So that's how I got into it.
Yeah, interesting. And I think that resonates with us so well. One, because you're right, BitTensor can be complicated. That's why we like to do so much content about BitTensor, because we try to explain what's happening behind the scenes to the community and everyone in the world of crypto. And so you mentioned subnets, and it's interesting that you kind of just gave us an early peek into the beginning days of BitTensor, you know, no subnet tokens, very few subnets, people behind the scenes that no one knows. And BitTensor has really come so far in really such a short period of time. You know, it's kind of crazy that all this has only happened within BitTensor within a few years, really, whereas, you know, you see how long it takes other companies to build and become successful. So now you mentioned subnets. A lot of our followers, a lot of our community has now been digging into subnets quite a bit over the past while. And that's why we mentioned at the start of the episode, subnets are in a massive bull run. So let's talk about the three subnets that you are involved with, that Macrocosmos is involved with building. And that's subnet one, which is Apex, subnet nine, which is IOTA, and subnet 13, which is Data Universe. If you can give us a quick elevator pitch for each of these subnets and what problems they're solving.
So subnet one, subnet nine, subnet 13, that's the tech stack for decentralized AI, right? We've got data, intelligence, and training. So Apex, subnet one, is an algorithmic optimization competition. What that means is give us your algorithm, and it can be anything from like video compression to like training matrices. our miners can probably improve its performance by a hell of a lot. So we do a new competition every month, and we take submissions from different teams, from different organizations, and then we incentivize our miners to improve the algorithm that's submitted, and then we can put it into practice and prove its effectiveness. So the first one we did was an algorithm for optimizing data compression strategies on subnet 9, which is IOTA. And subnet 9 is pre-training for LLMs over the internet. So when you use like ChatGPT, when you use, you know, Claude, that's been trained in a giant data center, huge stacks of like GPUs connected together, running 24/7 on all the world's worth of data, and using a hell of a lot of power in the process. Why? Because these models are enormous. The data that they're trained on is enormous, and you just need a hell of a lot of power to do it. Now, the reason you don't do it on the internet is because guess what? The internet's low bandwidth. Like, it's still hard to get connectivity to do like a video call, let alone train a gigantic model. So we found at Macrocosmos, we started this project back in like May 2025. And by the summer, we'd launched IOTA, which is our own pre-training process with our own compression strategy, which compresses the data by about 128x and allows us to distribute shards of a model over the internet to people with completely different hardware levels, going as low as like a consumer grade MacBook all the way up to big tech stack, parcel it up, get them to train elements of the model, mark each other's work, put it through to the validator who like double checks and audits everything. If it's correct, it gets passed down to the next group in the cylinder. So we're going to train the biggest model ever trained over the internet. Right now it's live and anyone can join it, permissionless, which means this week we opened the full beta of training at home, which is allowing people with consumer grade hardware to enter the training run and get paid for it. So right now you can go and get paid to contribute to the training of an LLM, much better than one company having proprietary access to a black box model that they can do anything with and that no one knows how it's been trained and people aren't being don't have the chance to co-own it. So that's subnet 9. And that takes us finally to subnet 13, Data Universe, which is data retrieval. Within like 6 months of launching it in 2024, it became the world's largest open source repository of social media data anywhere in the world. So we mostly gather real-time on-demand data from X, Reddit, and YouTube. The miners can scrape any data you want on demand. So you'd write out like a data collection task. I want these keywords, these hashtags, set a time frame. They'll deliver it to you. Click download data set, the data is yours. So you can use that to train models. You can use that to conduct consumer research. You can use that to hand over to agents on their tasks and workflows as well. So data, intelligence, and then pre-training. They fit together, but they also work separately. Those are the Macrocosmos subnets.
That's awesome. I can see anybody who's diving into the realm of AI, I can see them, you know, maybe utilizing these subnets specifically because it sounds like it makes your life a hell of a lot easier. Mm-hmm. Let's dive into how Macrocosmos work. Is it like, are all the different subnets, they operate independently, or are the resources shared? Maybe you can give us a little bit of a background here.
We have lead engineers. We have like people who are assigned to subnets, but we also have like roving units of like crack squads of basically cross-disciplinary teams where we work across different projects so we can integrate them, drive performance, or deliver like cross-cutting initiatives. Each subnet, you can think of it as like the back end, right? Because you're producing these intelligence commodities. You're incentivizing all these miners around the world who you've never met, who is often just a string of numbers on a screen, and you're trying to get them in concert to produce something quite complex. Anything you can formalize, anything a computer can do, you can get a BitTensor subnet to do. But in order to actually turn that into a viable business, you need more than just a really tight formula, a good back end, and great engineers. You need to productionize it, you need to turn it into a front end, you need to work out a go-to-market strategy. That's why we integrate the team at Macrocosmos so that We don't have isolated engineers working on tech problems that don't lead to outcomes, that don't actually drive performance or sales. We integrate them so that we create different kinds of front ends and products, but also different kinds of like sales strategies so that we actually can sell them. Ultimately, we scaled Macrocosmos to 30 plus staff in under a year without fundraising, without any like raise at all. And we did that because in other organizations, you sell equity to buy access to compute. That's what the traditional tech startup would do. You come up with an idea, you come up with a pitch, and you'd be like, right, we need a lot of compute because we're going to be training a model, or we're going to be creating this like data protocol. We need 30 million. Here's how much equity we can give investors in return for that. On BitTensor and what we did at Macrocosmos, we didn't sell any equity. We got paid by BitTensor, by the emissions, to incentivize compute and keep our equity at the same time. So it's like it flips the script. You can incentivize compute, the compute you need, not buy it and not have to sell equity to raise the funds to buy it. So that's how Cosmos works, and that's the BitTensor advantage.
Yeah, I mean, that's the BitTensor pitch in a nutshell, right? The fact that you didn't have to raise all that capital, give away the equity stake to your business. BitTensor and the emissions pay you for what you're contributing to the ecosystem. And speaking of the ecosystem, you know, when I earlier in the episode, I talked about how far it has come in such a long period of time. We've seen the birth of the subnets and the very impressive subnets that you've helped build. We've seen the implementation of DTAO, subnet tokens, and then TauFlow. We've seen a ton of significant changes that you have personally witnessed much more than we have behind the scenes of BitTensor. So my next question is, I want you to tell us about how all of these significant changes have impacted BitTensor as a whole and the subnets that you've been working on.
Great question. Good knowledge as well. The complexity you describe is one of the reasons why, despite its massive power and potential, BitTensor is still underutilized, it's still underappreciated, and it's still almost under the radar. I think part of it is that it has so many layers to it, but as you've described, it's evolved really fast into this sub-economy of different subnets, creating different properties, integrating with each other. It can be difficult for one person to have a full perspective on all of it. So subnets were the first big innovation, and that was Q3, Q4 in 2023, so almost 3 years ago. Subnets are subnetworks. Each subnet is like bandwidth. It's BitTensor bandwidth, right? BitTensor is the world's largest network of distributed compute. It's like you're connecting all these computers together and creating a supercomputer around the world. And then you incentivize the people connecting those machines to produce a particular intelligence commodity, or to drive towards a specific goal, train a model, fold a protein, predict a soccer game. And in that subnet, the compute, the miners produce what you're asking them to, if you formalize it well, if you incentivize them properly. And then you, as the subnet owner, get to sell that intelligence commodity. The miners get the emissions, get the token. You get some emissions too, but less than the miners because they're the ones producing it. But then you get this intelligence commodity, a buy signal, a data set, a model that you've trained, which you can then take to market. So that the creation of the subnet at first was a huge step forward in the BitTensor ecosystem, but it's like, how do you make this work? It's so different from a normal business. You don't. At Macrocosmos, we started Subnet 25. This was back in like 2024. Subnet 25 was the first science subnet. It was the first organization, first subnet on BitTensor to do scientific research. We were modeling the folding of proteins. We had two engineers on it. We had no molecular biologists. We had no compute in-house. In 6 months, we modeled the folding of more proteins than folding at home managed in 20 years. And that's when you start to see, wow, this has got insane power. But you do it by writing the rules of what you want the people to produce, what you want miners to produce. And the better you write those formulas, the better the output of the miners. So it's like a board game where you write the rules, or like you're like a video game designer. You design the level, but you don't play it. You design the level and you put the tokens in, folded proteins, but the miners are the ones who have to play it and collect them. If you design the level badly, there won't be any tokens, they won't come out the other side, or they'll cheat. like you used to do on Super Mario, jump up the top of the level, run all the way across, say you finished, but you don't have anything to show for it. So it took people a long time to understand. Miners won't play by the rules. They'll just do whatever it takes to get the emissions and the reward. But when they break the rules, they inadvertently illuminate your weaknesses. They show you where you need to improve, where the level needs to be changed. So by exploiting you, they show you where you need to make it stronger. And when you get your head around that, suddenly it's like, you're almost like, it's almost the opposite way of a business where like you're deliberately trying to get people to expose your weaknesses, not to hide them or to do it all in-house. It's like you're outsourcing your R&D to anyone all over the world who wants to contribute and who wants the reward. So that's subnets. Now, the emissions used to be paid in the native token, TAL, 21 million hard cap, limited supply, same as Bitcoin. Now, the difference with Bitcoin is, of course, the composability. It's more like Ethereum in that you can make BitTensor produce anything, like the Ethereum virtual machine. So you've got the tokenomics of Bitcoin, the composability of Ethereum, connected to the world's largest supercomputer that's in open source, distributed, and permissionless hands. So at that point, that's a very strong pitch, but the problem was that some subnets did a lot more work than others. Some just basically creamed the emissions or were coasting and cruising. Others were literally pushing state of the art in their field. So DTAL, Dynamic TAL, was brought in to create subnet specific tokens. So you have a system whereby every subnet is its own market with its own liquidity pool. People can buy and sell the subnet token depending on perception of how well they're doing. Suddenly, you've exposed every single team to free market forces, which is incredibly powerful. Now, Macrocosmos, on the night DTAL came in, which was just over a year ago, it's 13th February 2025, and I remember because we were on a live stream with Jacob, the founder of BitTensor, for the switchover, because we had the most subnets and we had prepared, like, here's what we're going to do now that the market's going open. I went to bed that night thinking, like, tomorrow, is there going to be this huge explosion? Are we going to wake up like multimillionaires, or is the network just going to collapse? We had literally no idea. And suddenly what became a long-term research-oriented project became very short-term for a few months, because guess what? People buy and sell subnet tokens based on social media, and suddenly everyone oriented from, no one's got a website, very few people do socials, everyone's a dev talking to another dev, to it's full on crypto Twitter, you're on X, you have to constantly build in public. And in the end, it was a really good thing because it takes things that are happening behind closed doors and it brings them right out to the open. It forces subnets to constantly ship and to prove that they're shipping to retail. So subnet tokens are barely a year old, and we already have lots of deep liquidity, real products, interesting use cases, interesting ways of harnessing the token, and more liquidity, more buyers than ever. The final one you mentioned, did you mention TAOflow?
Yes.
Goodness me. Now we're getting into the weeds, but thing about money is that it's not one thing, it's multidimensional. It's a store of value, it's a medium of exchange, and it's also a form of investment. And when you come to subnet tokens, Jake created an amazing system of exposing teams to market pressure, but it wasn't necessarily a good store of value, and it wasn't necessarily a good form of investment, not because it's not worth anything, but because it's hard to design a tokenomic system that can do all of those things at once. One of the problems of subnet tokens was that if you had loads and loads of investment early on, it would boost your emissions from the protocol because it looks like the market is giving you a big upvote, loads of people bought in. But then if no one bought in for months and months afterwards, but you had that big initial investment, you'd still get lots and lots of emissions. You'd be rated highly by the protocol because you have a high total amount of investment, which meant that a lot of the early teams got an unassailable lead. So TAOflow was going, it's not about how much is in total in your liquidity pool that shows whether the market is in favor of what you're building. It's new investment, it's new money coming in. And if you don't have any new money coming in, your emissions drop to zero. which means you don't get any new money from the protocol. So it creates a system whereby it's like, you've got to not just attract capital, you've got to keep attracting it. So it raised the bar yet again, and that came in November.
That was so beautifully articulated. Guys, if you are new to subnets, if you're an expert in subnets, go back and rewatch exactly what Chris just said again on that entire segment, because he nailed it on the head. Mm-hmm. Chris, you also mentioned that BitTensor is under the radar. And we tend to agree. You know, we've gone to different conferences and whatnot. You speak to people in the industry. Hey, have you heard of Tao? 1 out of 10 people, haven't heard it. Like 99% of people haven't heard of it yet. Maybe it is because it is semi-confusing, you know? But what you just expressed there, I think, is really going to paint a beautiful picture around what's actually occurring. So again, listen to that. But what's happening, what we're seeing now, is maybe some institutional interest. You know, we have the likes of Barry Silbert, the Bitcoin OG, who is calling BitTensor the next Bitcoin. We have Grayscale, Yuma, you know, all building these capital on-ramps to bring money into the ecosystem. Have you seen any positive impact of these developments firsthand?
It's been huge. Honestly, I used to think that the investors were kind of like a sideshow in BitTensor, or just like, you know, not as fundamental as like the builders or like the fans or the miners. But actually, little known fact, BitTensor has the most native funds on its protocol than any other crypto. It's behind only Bitcoin and Ethereum. So it's like the 35th, 36th most valuable crypto, but it has the third highest number of funds dedicated to it, where all their capital is devoted to the BitTensor subnets. So you mentioned Barry Silbert of Digital Currency Group. He switched most of Foundry, his Bitcoin mining operation, to BitTensor back in 2023. And then he created a separate company, especially for BitTensor investment, Yuma, which is named after the Yuma consensus, which is like the USP of BitTensor itself. It's like the mechanism that allows BitTensor to score on a spectrum of quality, not on a binary yes, no, was this output correct or not, which is what allows you to actually score complex intelligence commodities in a way that is meaningful and not just computer says no. So we've also had James Altucher, ex-Taos Energies, podcaster, author of 8 books, founder of about 20 companies, leading a native fund. Cefelo, the biggest decentralized exchange in the Nordics, have a fund dedicated to BitTensor. There's Stillcore, which you mentioned, unsupervised capital as well. They're playing a huge part. Like a really, really huge part, because they're finding ways to invest not only in Tau, but in the subnets themselves. Subnets are high-risk assets, subnet tokens. This is one high-risk asset on top of another high-risk asset. So you need investors who can understand the long-term value of what we're building here. And they've helped to articulate that value from an investor's perspective. So you can think of subnet tokens as like, you know, an Web3 asset like any other, but really they're kind of like units of compute that are priced by the market according to how well the market thinks you're incentivizing that compute. And as we move towards an era whereby compute power is the fundamental denominator of business success, that's gonna become the next wave of economic progress in tech. It's, can we connect value itself to compute processing and the outputs of that compute? That's what BitTensor does. That's why having people like Barry, James, and others with their native funds makes such a difference, because they can articulate this. They can help us to pitch this to institutional capital.
Yeah, for sure. It definitely helps to have a lot of these early stage visionaries now backing BitTensor. You know, when Barry Silbert and his team started Grayscale with their Bitcoin funds back in the day, a lot of people would have probably called them crazy. And look what's happening now, right? You know, in Canada, we always like to say, skate to where the puck is going, not where it is, right? So I think a lot of these people, and yourself included, are skating to where the puck is going. And, you know, in a few years, things can move quickly. We'll see who has the last laugh. But now when we talk about leadership, you mentioned Jacob Steves, you know, aka Const on X or Twitter. So, and I mentioned, you know, BitTensor, new developments are happening rapidly, but the latest big development is that Jacob, who was the CEO of BitTensor, has formally stepped down. and kind of relinquished his control to the governance, to the community of BitTensor. So this is pretty big news. And of course, as someone who builds in BitTensor every day, we wanted to get your opinion on how this is going to change things.
First thing to say is that Jake's the real thing. He's a visionary, like a lot of founders, but he's a founder who is fully committed in that he's still building. Another founder would have moved on to their next idea, sold out, moved upstairs to do one conference after another. Jacob didn't do that. Jacob is still building. He does calls like with new aspiring subnet teams week in, week out. And I know because he does that through Bitstarter, and he helps our new teams to build their ideas better. He's stepping back from his official role so that he can do more of that. He can get more done, not less. BitTensor is governed by the OpenTensor Foundation, which is like a nonprofit that manages the protocol level changes. From the beginning, Jacob said he like codified OpenTensor will vanish. Like it has a fixed schedule where it's eventually just going to shrink and disappear because he wanted it to be fully decentralized from the start. If anything, the community has generally wanted him to be more involved because he's so, he understands it inside out. He commits to every team to help to commenting and helping them. And because he understands how to build on it better than anyone. So it's less of a like, oh, at last the founder has like relinquished his like tight grip on us. It's more like I need to move out of my official role so I can be in the trenches more. So the news was really, really well received because it's not like he's going to go retire in like Florida. He's going to be building more, but by relinquishing it, it means that we can go to full decentralization, decentralization of nodes, decentralization of the entire process, which is both commendable in theory and really, really valuable in practice. Not many chains have achieved it at all.
Absolutely. Yeah, I got to love exactly what Jake's been doing. I mean, we've been following BitTensor and him for the last 3 or 4 years now. It's crazy how much time's flying. Let's talk building. You have a new project, as we alluded to at the very beginning of the episode, and that is a BitStarter. It's like a Kickstarter for BitTensor. And this is a crowdfunded launch pad. Maybe you could tell us why this is so important for BitTensor and what's going on there.
So BitStarter is entirely self-funded, entirely independent. I bought the domain name in JFK Airport. My flight was delayed back to London after I was in New York for business, for Macrocosmos. Happened to go to a couple of events, pitched this idea. One person introduced me to another. Airport on the way back, I thought, I just need to do this. Why? Because starting a new subnet on BitTensor was getting harder and harder and harder. And I knew this because people come up to me at conferences and go, you're a part of Macrocosmos, right? How did you guys do it? And I would be meeting literal AI, like machine learning PhDs. And it was taking them months to get onto BitTensor. And they had a great idea, they had the credentials, but they couldn't do it. Why? Because they'd write a white paper, they'd create a GitHub repo, and then they'd be like, well, I need to get investment for this. So I need to get assurance. I need to know that it's going to work. I need to have some idea of what it's going to be like to actually push this to mainnet. So they go to someone like Stefan, who's Macrocosmos CTO, or they go to Jake, or they go to one of the other subnet owners and say, hey, would this work on BitTensor? And maybe it would take them like a week, a month, who knows how long to get an answer. And usually it would be, nah, man, you might be amazing at machine learning, but the miners are going to tear this apart. Go back to the drawing board. And suddenly, without that assurance, without actually getting proper assistance to build what they're building, they would struggle to then get funding, which would mean that the only investors who'd be willing to back them are the ones who'd give them pretty like stringent terms. Not stringent in the grand scheme of things, but subnet owners only get 18% of emissions. That means that if an investor takes, say, 6% of that 18%, I know from Macrocosmos, those margins are going to be thin if you're going to try and create state-of-the-art anything. So it was like a bottleneck where fewer and fewer teams were able to get onto the protocol and build on it quickly because there was so much demand and because too few people were able to help and enrich new teams with the skills they needed to succeed. So I thought, right, let's build backwards from those problems, right? Let's start from the problem and then let's work backwards from it. So on BitStarter, you can submit a project. You can submit an idea for a subnet. hey, I've got an idea for a subnet that's going to create like a universal semantic architecture. Like we're going to do data labeling of any type of semantic information anywhere in the world. Here's my white paper. Here's my GitHub. What do you think? Me and my team will take that technical documentation and we assess it, we review it, we comment on it, we upskill it, we pour in a lot of experience from the business world as well. So it's not just engineering. We assist with engineering too, but we've got marketing. We've got protocol level understanding of how subnets work. We've got people who've been in other accelerators. We've got investor relations. We've got publicity and design as well. So we can do the full range, but at the beginning, it's assessing whether this would work on BitTensor and how to create like a subnet MVP. Once the team who submitted it are happy with it, we then share it with our advisory panel, which is who's who of people who've built on BitTensor, but also people who are adjacent to the protocol who can advise in their vertical. So for example, Jose Rios was vice president of Intel's chip making division for 20 years. Max Sebti runs Subnet 44, Score, one of the most, the subnet with the most commercial partnerships. Emily is CEO of Cefelo, the decentralized exchange I mentioned earlier. James Altica, you already know. We have people from different fields, and it's that mixture of BitTensor protocol knowledge with understanding of investment, commercial modeling, of how to run a validator, and from Jacob himself as well. It's that mixture of experts who can comment on your submission, give you free discretionary advice. You don't have to take it, it's not a veto, but they can also connect you to the right people in the ecosystem to build it better, build it faster, and have a stronger chance of winning investment because it's been assured by these people, right? So Giles is a co-founder of Tensora. Tensora, the biggest mining consortium on BitTensor. Giles has mined basically every subnet going. He can tell you what the miners will likely make of your subnet proposal. And it's that kind of advice. I would ask teams before I launch BitStarter, what would you give for like a day with one of these people? And they say, I'd give 3 months worth of emissions because it would have saved me so many false turns and so many missteps. You don't want to get to mainnet and then you're burning and you don't know why, right? And at that point, you've already given up a lot of your emissions to get the funding to be able to buy the slot. So once the panel, I've given you the advisory, that means we do our technical due diligence, we make sure teams are doxed. We're then ready to launch you. And we do that by introducing the team via live stream. So we go live on air, we introduce the team, we show people what they're trying to build. We pitch the project and what it can achieve. This was a team that we launched last month, introduced them to the protocol. Two of them are professors at East Coast universities, one in statistics, one in quantitative research. Another runs a hedge fund and hosts an AI podcast. And the other is a immunologist, serial founder with multiple exits and a chair at Harvard. And these guys said, we couldn't have launched on BitTensor without BitStarter, right? Because of that complexity, because BitTensor is ultimately, to outsiders, 128 GitHubs and countless Discord servers. No one's gonna actually walk you through the whole process. I thought, well, I've seen it done at Macrocosmos. I'll walk them through the process and I'll wherever I don't know, I'll find people that do. So with Jin, this is like an intelligence, a signal subnet, like an asymmetric intelligence layer whereby people can sell predictive signals that other people can then buy and then say place bets on the outcome and people can see how successful the sellers of intelligence are. They were looking to raise 600 tau, which at the time was about $180,000. And we managed to complete the raise in like under an hour, in 51 minutes. Wow. We managed to complete the round. That means that people pledge tau, the native token, to the team, like you would on GoFundMe or on Kickstarter. In return, they get future allocation of the new subnet token that will be created when Jin hit the protocol. So we give them it at a discount of what the subnet price currently is. So for a 20% discount on the subnet token, you have to lock it up for 1 month, going up to 40% for a 3 month lockup. Lockup's really important because it means that we don't get the pump and dump economics. I don't want them to launch on day one, like the price crashes, everyone cashes out. I want to create a steady line of credit for new teams. And I want to create a system whereby people become advocates. I want to give them a platform where they can pitch their idea and find their people, people who back them in the long term and who want to stick by them. Because that's what you need when you're a founder. That's what you need when you're launching a startup. So the alpha tokens that you get when you pledge the TAO, okay, I really like Jin. I'm going to pledge 10 TAO, the native token, in return for this much of their alpha. And it's going to be at a 40% discount on the current market rate. Fantastic. You get that alpha that you're entitled to in return for your TAO on a weekly basis. So gradually it gets distributed to you, not all at once. And again, it gives the team a chance to build rapport with the pledges. And so far, we've launched 4 teams. The first one in November and most recently last week. And the team we launched last week, I saw you did a post on a few days ago, because it's a payments protocol for autonomous AI agents. So maybe we'll talk about that later on, but that's why I created Bitstarter, to build BitTensor better. Get the best founders, upskill them, bring them onto the protocol. If you're having professors say, we couldn't have done it, it was too complex. If you've got machine learning PhD saying, like, it's taking us 9 months, you're never going to take off. It's just never going to work. I want it eventually to become the Y Combinator of BitTensor, where we have a whole portfolio of next-gen decentralized AI startups. And eventually we can go out there and we can bring founders, we can bring the best new startups to build on BitTensor, because we've got a strong pathway towards incentivizing compute and getting paid for it. So that's Bitstarter. It's still relatively fresh. Our first launch was in November, but we plan to do at least one launch a month from now on.
And this is something that anybody can take part in. I see, you know, you're raising 220 TAO. I imagine that goes pretty quick. Like you said, 1 hour, you know, can Jolly and I just jump on there? And
it would be a real pleasure. I do the live stream and I dial people in from across BitTensor who want to know more about the project. We can do like shout outs to people pledging, but as you say, anyone can join. You just need to connect your wallet, BitTensor wallet, and understand the terms, understand like what you're getting in return to what you're pledging. But we honor this commitment. We sign it off with all the parties involved. Everyone has got all of their everything that they're entitled to. And I can safely say that every single team is far above the launch price. That's not a promise, but one of the reasons it works is that we also only get paid in the subnet alpha, as in me and my team. We don't get anything until launch. And then at launch, we take 3% of the emissions for the first 3 months. The only other competitor who does this, or who was doing this, was taking 20 to 30% in perpetuity. So we got over 20 applications in our first like 6 weeks, 8 weeks after I bought the domain name. We didn't even have this website. People were coming through to me, some of them like serial founders with really decorated and accomplished careers, saying, hey, can you help me build on BitTensor? Can you help me get a subnet? And I was amazed by the caliber. But again, it's so complex. Of course, people will gravitate towards those who are trying to help you to do it. So that's what we're trying to do. Give as much as you can, take as little as possible, get the best people building on BitTensor, create a flywheel effect.
Beautiful. I think this is going to be a huge net positive for BitTensor. We're always looking for the next killer app, the next killer subnet to launch on BitTensor and grab that mainstream attention or contribute to the BitTensor algorithm. I always kind of have a look at the different hackathons that are happening around the world, which always interests me, different parts, different Asia, Europe, because we just want to bring more smart minds into BitTensor. We want more projects and products launching on BitTensor. So I think what you've done there with Bitstarter will hopefully be extremely successful and really help to grow BitTensor with amazing new ideas. Which brings us to, I think it's a perfect segue to talk about this Handshake 58, the newest subnet that Bitstarter incubated. I think the timing could not be more perfect for this one, because if you're on Twitter, if you're on crypto Twitter, you're an AI person, you know what's happening. It's all about OpenClaw, these autonomous type AI agents that people are building to do seemingly anything. It seems like perhaps, is this the biggest innovation since ChatGPT in terms of consumer-facing AI products? And what Handshake is they're building trustless micropayments for these autonomous AI agents. We read this article recently where this guy predicted that, and now a lot of people are predicting this, very soon the internet is going to be predominantly AI agents. Forget humans. AI agents are going to be on the internet building things, transacting with each other, and they can't do this via bank accounts. They need to do this with, you know, instant finality, zero transaction fees, and they're going to need their own wallets, and they might need exactly the technology that Handshake is building. So can you tell us a little bit about exactly what Handshake is doing behind the scenes? And also, we're interested in your opinion on what's going on with this whole explosion with OpenClaw and autonomous AI agents.
It's incredible, isn't it? And it's mind-blowing how fast it is, but it's also incredibly logical. Agents don't get tired. They don't get sleepy. They can run all the time. And one person can have multiple agents working in concert. So why, of course, they're going to outcompete a lot of traditional ways of creating value, of buying and selling, of transacting. But guess what? The infrastructure for finance, for payments, the whole digital e-commerce economy is built for humans. Oh, can you just submit your driving license for a KYC? Can you log into your bank account? Can you show proof of address? There are all these little ways in which the system is just not geared for anything but a human being in often a Western country with the kind of wherewithal to use these systems. That means that we can't really have autonomous AI unless we change the financial infrastructure. Now, when I started getting into AI in 2023, I realized there was a lot of negativity around the future of the economy because people were like, well, AI is just going to capture all the value. How, everyone's going to be out of a job. But the more I looked into it, the more I realized, no, agents are just going to create way more value than the human economy has ever created. And it's coming really soon. So I actually wrote this in 2024, published it in 2025, but basically saying AI agents are going to become autonomous. The financial infrastructure is going to be geared around them. And the agentic economy is going to outpace the human one very, very soon. And the question is, how do we distribute that value? How do we make sure it gets properly shared? And ultimately, it's really optimistic because there are so many ways in which agents can create value that we've not even thought of yet. In the same way that the crypto, that the blockchain, created all kinds of ways of transacting, of creating value that just hadn't been thought of before. It just didn't exist before the blockchain that brought in tokenization, that brought in digital assets and all the infrastructure around them. Agents are about to do the same thing by harnessing that infrastructure. Crypto is perfect for agents because they don't need a bank account. It's faster to transact. It's much more composable. It's much more effective in a truly digital economy. At the same time, AI means that they can learn recursively from their choices, that they can transact with each other without needing human interaction. That's where Handshake comes in. Now, we've already said that BitTensor is 128 subnets producing intelligence commodities. They have APIs, there are SDKs, there are modal context protocols, MCPs, different agents to interact with them. They don't really have that much traction in real world revenue with fiat. Why? Because most procurement models in corporations, most enterprise procurement systems, they're not geared to buy from a subnet, from a Web3 tokenized miner permissionless protocol. And so if you're trying to sell to the vast majority of businesses, it's very difficult if you're building on the chain to get sales from off chain. That's where the real friction point is, right? Now, agents don't care about that. They don't care that you don't satisfy traditional legacy systems of what a procurement model should look like. They're looking for uptime. they're looking for cost, they're looking for speed, and they're looking for quality. And all of those are in BitTensor. It may well be, quite ironically, that AI agents are the ideal customer for BitTensor subnets in a way that no BitTensor subnet has really managed to get a very significant traction in real world revenue. We have shoots who are making like tens of millions every quarter. And we have subnets like Score who have like dozens of real world partnerships. When you compare it to like big tech companies, it's a drop in the ocean. We're still talking about tens of millions, not billions, right? Now, what if we get to the point where there are more AI agents than humans and they're transacting 24/7 and they need intelligence commodities like the data sets I showed you on Data Universe, inference, data storage, compression. There's an entire sub-economy of those on BitTensor. It just doesn't have enough human traction. We've launched Handshake 58, this agent-to-agent payments protocol for autonomous transactions to connect every single BitTensor subnet API with all kinds of real-world APIs, systems like OpenRouter, so that we can create this marketplace of autonomous transactions that's designed for agents first. So that's the pitch. I actually met the full stack engineer, the lead engineer on this in Davos a month ago. I was invited to give a talk there on AI and data centers after pitching training at home, Macrocosmos Subnet 9 IOTA, the distributed training and LLM over the internet architecture. And at not that event, but the next one at AI House, I met this full stack engineer who showed me, hey, I've written in 200 lines of code, I'm writing this agent payments protocol. Me and a couple of other BitTensor people were there. We spoke to him more and more. And the more we looked into it, the more we realized this is perfect for BitTensor. We worked night and day for 3 weeks. We introduced Otter and Handshake 58 via live stream like 7-8 days ago. It's now on the protocol. We've just onboarded the second subnet on the back end. And that's what happens when you get the right people in the room, in the right room at the right time. You get to capitalize on a moment like this. If it hadn't been for BitStarter, we wouldn't have been able to move anywhere near it as fast. And ultimately, that's how you stay up to date with the cutting edge, right? You incorporate it in your system. You don't stay behind.
Yeah, it definitely seems as though the OpenClaw AI agent, you know, wave that we're seeing now could have massive tailwinds for BitTensor. But maybe we can put put your forward thinking hat on here. And I want to know, like, what do you see happening with the BitTensor ecosystem? What do you want to see happen to take it to the next level in 2026? Do you want to see more customer facing apps? Do you want to see more revenue? Like, what do you want to see here as an expert? Like, clearly, as you've shown us in this episode,
what do I want to see? I want to see BitTensor solve the world's greatest problems. And I can say that because BitTensor is already state of the art across a number of really, really significant challenges, from training an LLM over the internet to compressing video 100x on VIDIA Subnet 85, which is more than anyone else in the entire sector, to doing genomes and exploring genomes for drug discovery and exploring chemical space to find molecular combinations that no one else has found before. This is already happening, but BitTensor has yet to find its killer app, in part because it's so new still. This is like the early days of the internet, whereby you have all these incredible companies that are proving, yeah, you can do e-commerce, you can sell books or secondhand goods online, but we haven't yet had like Amazon, right? We haven't yet had Facebook. We haven't yet had any really mass adoption of any significant industry-leading way. But BitTensor can do this because it allows you to incentivize compute in such a way that it's much more efficient. And a lot of the world's biggest problems, they're intractable because they're coordination problems. It's because it's expensive to search for the origin of life when you don't have like a specific product in mind. It's expensive to explore the nature of consciousness when that means you have to explore insane amounts of parameters of layered end. So universities are left with these problems, but they're left with them with a little bit of funding. Sometimes there's a billionaire with an interest or fund a company. But fundamentally, if you look at Web 2, the companies that got really big, like the ones I mentioned earlier, like Facebook, oh, it's social media, but really it's an ad business, right? What did Google become? It became an ad business. Because in the end, incentives are everything. Show me the incentive and I'll show you the outcome, right? On BitTensor, it's the other way around, right? What's incentivized is what is rewarded, is what works. You can incentivize the supercomputer, the distributed compute, to go after the fundamentals of intelligence itself if you can code the parameters for it, if you can bound the problem set. Now, a lot of the subnets that we've got are very ambitious, but I think we're going to see a much, much higher bar with the next generation. I want the next 128 subnets to be way better than the previous ones. That's why at Bitstarter, we're enriching them with everything we learned from the first generation at Macrocosmos and across the protocol, so that we can get the best teams building on the protocol. And if you are going to come and do an origin of life startup, I want you to start with a head start with everything that we've learned since the beginning. So that's what I want to see. And I think that that's what will lead us to becoming state of the art. It's going after the hardest problems with the biggest possible scope, and then going hard for them, incentivizing the compute, incentivizing miners, and making it happen.
Yeah, I wouldn't bet on any other ecosystem to solve these biggest problems. I feel like BitTensor has the smartest people in the room. It has some of the most revolutionary tech in the room. And as we always like to remind our listeners, it is still early days. We have seen BitTensor evolve so much in a few years, as you described from behind the scenes. And just think of how much can happen in the next few years when we see what's happening with AI agents, autonomous agents, just the explosion of consumer-facing apps that hopefully can be produced from BitTensor. So yeah, I think the future is exciting. I think this is like, you know, the 100x, 1000x opportunity of the next generation of where the world is headed, which is why Nifty and I have been so bullish on BitTensor from the start. And conversations with people like you just confirm our bias that BitTensor, I think, is really probably the most attractive project in crypto for us. And I think a lot of our community agrees. So I want to say thanks. Thanks a million for coming on the show today, Chris. We learned a lot about BitTensor, as we always do anytime we speak to someone in BitTensor. And I hope our listeners learned a lot today as well.
Thank you very much, Shane, Josh. It's been awesome. You can find me on X at MacroZack. Macro, like Macrocosmos, Zack, Z-A-C-K. And Bitstarter at bitstarter.ai. So anyone out there who wants to know more about BitTensor, at me. Anyone who wants to build a subnet, come to Bitstarter and we'll see if we can make it happen.
For sure. We're going to link all of your Twitter bio, your company, Bitstarter. It's all going to be in the description. So if you guys want to check that out, head there.
Hey, make sure you guys tune to the next episode.
That one is going to be a banger.
All views expressed by speakers on the Beanpod are solely their opinions. You should not treat any opinion expressed on the Beanpod as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a specific strategy, but only as an expression of their opinion. This podcast is for informational purposes only.